and Ms. Morgan. Okay, so our last case for argument, United States v. King. Ms. Prasad?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Vinayaka Prasad, counsel for defendant appellant Joe Nathan King. Your Honors, this case is about basic procedural fairness needed to effectuate an act that Congress passed to restore fairness to federal crack cocaine sentencing, that is, the Fair Sentencing Act. Now, that act spurred the retroactive Amendment 750 to United States Sentencing Guidelines, and that is the motive for Mr. King's petition for resentencing. Now, Mr. King actually utilized a method for this petition for resentencing that was best calculated to promote judicial efficiency. He used the same format for his petition for resentencing that he had used for an earlier petition filed in 2008 for resentencing under an earlier crack cocaine amendment. Now, that request was granted at the time in 2008. He also used the same format that was used throughout the district for requesting this two-level decrease to a guideline level based on Amendment 750. And there was a good reason that the same format was used throughout the district. And that is because there are many possible considerations.
I'm lost. What's the relevance of format? I don't understand that.
Well, Your Honor, Mr. King did not address any post-sentencing conduct in his initial request for resentencing. That post-sentencing conduct was included in the PSR, and that is ultimately upon which the district court denied his request. Now, the reason that he did not include any comment on that post-sentencing conduct is because that is one possible basis that the court could have considered in its ultimate determination of Mr. King's resentencing request. Now, a court is required to consider all factors listed in 18 U.S.C. Section 3553A, the various factors for sentencing, in determining whether or not to grant...
Does the defendant have to challenge the pre-sentence investigation report in order to get the court to reject it? I don't understand.
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing in the pre-sentence report that suggests that information should be used to deny Mr. King his request. The probation office did not make a recommendation.
Well, why wouldn't what's in the pre-sentence investigation report be germane to the sentence, whatever the basis for a particular adjustment might be?
It's absolutely germane, Your Honor, and there are many other pieces of information included in the PSR.
That's adverse to the defendant is in the report, isn't he expected to challenge it if he disagrees with it?
Your Honor, for several reasons, I think that that's not actually the practice that's being utilized for these sentence reduction requests. One reason is that the PSR does contain a wide variety of information related to Section 3553A factors.
But almost all of it relates to what occurred before the sentencing. This is the most current information, and it's the only information about what has happened since the sentencing. So it gives the most up-to-date information about the defendant himself, doesn't it?
Yeah, a court does have all of the PSRs, previous PSRs, as well as the addendum that's prepared specifically in regard to the instant motion for resentencing. Now, the most recent information regarding Mr. King did not only include post-sentencing conduct based on sanctions by the Bureau of Prisons. It also included a great number of courses that he had taken within the Bureau of Prisons.
How he progressed on getting the GED that the judge had suggested that he pursue and so forth.
Yes, it did include remarks regarding his GED performance. It also included that he had taken several parenting courses, several vocational training courses, and had actually successfully completed many of those courses in order to further his own vocational skills within the Bureau of Prisons. So there is information both mitigating and potentially aggravating in the PSR.
But if it's potentially aggravating, then you'd expect the defendant to challenge it if he thought there was that it was it could be shown to be inaccurate, right?
Well, Your Honor, it's not that the defendant believed that that information was inaccurate. And in fact, in his petition for rehearing, he did not challenge the accuracy of the listed names of BOP sanctions. He simply gave factual context, which was something that was not included in the PSR, in order to make the judge understand.
Well, you call it factual context. He certainly tried to pull the sting from these various post-sentencing misconduct. And why didn't he do that in the sentencing?
Well, Your Honor, going back to the format that is being used for these resentencing requests, this format is used throughout the district. The Federal Defender's Office, in fact, handled the majority of these cases. And in each one of these cases, the same format was submitted to a district court. And the reason for that is because in most of these cases, no party actually filed.
What do you mean by a format, though? I don't understand you.
The format that was used,
Your Honor. Not challenging adverse information? That's a format?
Yes, Your Honor.
That sounds like a mistake to me.
Your Honor, it is actually a basic listing of what the defendant's original sentence was, the basis for that sentence, what he is now requesting, and the basis for that request. That is what is submitted in each resentencing.
And if the PSR undermines the request, you'd expect him to challenge that, if
Your
he
Honor,
could.
I think that there is a real question as to whether the PSR undermines that request. In this case, the probation department, which prepared the PSR, did not request that Mr. King not receive the request or the reduction as requested. And the government also did not view anything in the PSR as aggravating to the point that Mr. King should not receive the reduction as requested. Mr. King.
This was the original sentencing, and there were adverse information in the PSR, and the defendant didn't dispute it. Don't you agree the judge could have considered that adverse information in arriving at an appropriate sentence under 3553?
Yes, Your Honor, but it would have
so
been
what,
a very
how is it
different.
How's it any different than at a resentencing after the guideline amendment?
Your Honor, it's not that it's different. It is that there is a big difference in procedure. At an original sentencing, the defendant actually
but
appears in court.
These procedures spelled out in the criminal rules or a local rule, are they?
Yes, actually, the procedure that's specifically spelled out in the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure for a sentencing hearing allows the defendant to have the opportunity to allocute to the court, to speak directly for his attorney to speak on his behalf. None of those rights are necessarily.
But that doesn't apply to the 3582.
Correct. None of those rights are inherently involved in the 3582 petition. So he is already at a
disadvantage. So what procedures are you referring to? Are you just inferring from what has happened in other cases?
I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Well, you're talking about procedures. Where are these procedures? They're not in the rules. They're not in a local rule.
The procedure for a 3582
right.
resentencing?
Right.
It's not that he's relying on some specific procedure that has been previously outlined. What he is doing is what the judges in these cases have expected to see, which is that basic statement of facts about your previous sentence, the basis for that previous sentence, what your request is, and the basis for your request for resentencing.
So the judges are routinely ignoring the new information.
Not that they're ignoring the new information, Your Honor, but in many cases this new information is not viewed to be so aggravating as to necessitate denying.
But this was aggravating. He didn't ask for a hearing, did he?
He did ask for a hearing in his motion for resentencing, Your Honor. And the reason for that hearing was specifically to address this factual error that he saw in the district court's statement of reasons.
It was after the resentencing that he asked for the hearing, correct?
After the district court had submitted its statement of reasons denying him the resentencing, he asked for a rehearing because there was a factual error in the court's assumptions regarding the statements in the PSR.
Consideration. Did he ask for a hearing?
He did, Your Honor. He asked for a hearing and specifically asked that he be allowed to testify if the court had any questions regarding those the BOP sanctions.
But he didn't do that until the judge had already made his decision, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, and I would point out that the reason for that is that judges have not actually wanted full sentencing memoranda in each of these cases. There are many, many criminal defendants asking for the same reduction in sentence, and it would actually be very difficult for district judges to go through a full sentencing memoranda in each of these cases. That would actually hinder the district court from being able to wade through all of these requests and deal with them quickly and efficiently. So instead, this basic motion is submitted. And if a court had further questions, that could be an opportunity for the defendant to respond to those questions. In this case, he was never asked anything specific. If the probation office or the government were to point to something specific to suggest denying him his request.
This doesn't make sense. If you're a defendant and you see adverse information in a pre-sentence report, you know that the judge may be influenced by it.
Your Honor,
and
you
have to do something about it.
I would disagree in that the same information...
It doesn't make sense. You see negative information. If it's wrong, you don't let it just pass into the judge's brain, right?
Your Honor, if it were wrong,
did he have a
yes.
Lawyer?
If it were
did
wrong...
Did he have a lawyer?
Yes, he had a lawyer.
And the lawyer looks at the pre-sentence report and says, look, there's some bad stuff in here. Now, is this true or not true?
Your Honor, there's...
The lawyer doesn't say that. He's not doing his job.
Your Honor, in his first resentencing request back in 2008, the same information, there were already sanctions against him at that time in 2008 that were included in the PSR at that time. There was no comment made on any of those sanctions, and in fact, his request had been granted. Now, again, he's following the same procedure that he had followed in 2008. He's actually not doing any, he's not deviating in any way from what had already been done in the past.
Were there any additional sanctions between 2008 and this resentencing?
There were additional sanctions, but there had been no notice. I believe there were 5 additional sanctions.
5 new sanctions.
Well, Your Honor, that is over...
You put 2 and 2 together and you say, all right, I got away with it in 2008. Now I have 5 more sanctions. Maybe the judge is going to, you know, be disturbed by this.
Well, to put that in context, Your Honor, that's 5 sanctions over...
Don't put it in context. There's negative information, you meet that information. If the lawyer doesn't tell you that, the lawyer isn't doing his job.
Your Honor, I would simply note that upon understanding the district court's factual error, the defendant did all that he could and asked for resentencing and reconsideration. And it would have been most efficient to deal with those factual errors at the district court level rather than ask the appellate court to now review the district court's statement of reasons.
That's right. Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Prasad. Ms. Kirchhoff?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Emily Kirchhoff on behalf of the United States. The district court did not err when it did not abuse its discretion when it denied Mr. King's 3582C motion without conducting hearing.
Is that correct about this strange formal procedure in this district court about ignoring these post-sentencing misconduct?
I believe that The motions that I have seen, the 3582C motions that I have seen filed by defendants, typically do not address post-sentencing conduct. However, that does not mean that the district court abused its discretion when it denied either Mr. King's 3582C motion or his motion for reconsideration.
It typically doesn't address it. Is this because there's nothing to say, or is it that some notion that judges don't pay any attention to post-sentencing?
I'm not entirely sure, due to my lack of familiarity with the Federal Defender's Office or any defendant's attorney's thought processes. However, you know, some defendants perhaps don't have post-sentencing disciplinary sanctions. Other defendants may.
Some don't.
So there could be a variety of factors that lead to these issues or the post-sentencing conduct not being addressed in a Section 3582C motion. However, that does not lead to the conclusion that the district court abused its discretion when it denied Mr. King's motion for reconsideration. As a procedural matter, all of this information was before the defendant, before he filed his first 3582C motion. The PSR addendum set forth the sanctions. And, in fact, in his motion for reconsideration, Mr. King has not disputed that those sanctions occurred, that he engaged in that behavior. He does, however, try to explain or justify his behavior, and it was not an abuse of discretion for the district court to discount Mr. King's explanations. You know, this information could have been raised before the motion for reconsideration. It could have been addressed in the Section 3582C motion. However, it was not. So the government believes that a motion for reconsideration was not a valid way to present these arguments. This court has stated that motions for reconsideration are not meant to be tools that a party can use to raise arguments that it should have raised earlier. However, even if the motion for reconsideration was a valid way to raise these arguments or challenges to the post-sentencing sanctions, the district court did not abuse its discretion when it denied a further sentence reduction on the basis of these sanctions. As this court noted, Mr. King had received 5 disciplinary sanctions since the granting of his first motion for sentence reduction in 2008, and that was over a span of perhaps 3 years. And the district court was faced with the determination of if he granted this, Mr. King's request, Mr. King was eligible for immediate release. So essentially the question before the district court was whether Mr. King would present a danger to the community if he was immediately released. And the district court's conclusions based on the fact that Mr. King could not comply with rules in a very structured environment and thus presented a danger to the community on the outside, I think is the words the district court used, or in an unstructured environment in the public, is not an abuse of discretion. If there are no further questions from the court, the government would respectfully request that the district court's denial of the motion for sentence reduction and the motion for reconsideration be affirmed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Kirchhoff. Ms. Prasad, your time expired. If you have anything further, you can have a minute.
And I would just add, in response to the question that was asked regarding the reasoning for not addressing this post-sentencing conduct, and that isn't to do with that judges are ignoring this conduct or that defendants are ignoring this conduct, but it really is a way to promote efficiency for judges who are handling hundreds of requests for resentencing. In most of these cases, judges do not want to wade through an entire sentencing memorandum that would elucidate the court on every single possible thing that is included in the PSR. So in cases where there is something included in the PSR in addition to the original conduct, it's not that that conduct will be ignored, but if there is some particular significance to that conduct that is raised in the course of the proceedings, one would expect that it is addressed by all parties.
Oh, I don't understand.
It could have been raised by the probation recommending that Mr. King not receive the reduction. It could have been raised by the government. It could have been raised by the district court when it appointed counsel. At that time, the district court could have asked that that post-sentencing conduct be specifically addressed.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you're a federal defender.
Yes.
So we thank the defenders and you, of course, specifically for your efforts on behalf of the client. And the court will be in recess.